Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Terrible. I'm still one. I love it.
Honey, lad.
The sky's coming again.
Who paid for the nachos?
Nor rain, nor wind, nor snow. Classico.
Boarding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding.
Hello, Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. We are sponsored by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Thursday, July 28th, 2022. Happy 21st birthday to Cole Bassett. Pro has issued its annual mea culpa after the Rapids game at Seattle Sounders. Cristiano Ronaldo is so thirsty for Champions League football, and it's starting to look sad. And by the transitive property, the Rapids, who tied Charlotte FC, who beat Chelsea FC on penalties, thereby makes it that the Rapids are the third best team in the English Premiership. I'm joined now by my platonic partner in soccer, Rabbi Mark Goodman, you beautiful human being. How are you?
I'm glad we have a platonic relationship, but can I get like a friends with benefits upgrade at some point in the future? Is if I become a paid subscriber, is that a benefit that comes with us or no? That's, am I already treading into dangerous waters here, Matt?
Moving on, Mark, the annual summer friendlies and European tours are finishing up for the most part for the big clubs in Europe. Some of the smaller leagues have already started, Mark. I'm pretty sure. I think it's the Championship. I think the lower three of the four divisions in English football are starting this weekend. And then obviously, I believe it's next weekend in which the English Premiership is back. And then at that point, most of the other European leagues are a week or two away. But, you know, since last you and I podcasted together, since you weren't able to make a pod, I can't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago. In any case, you know, we've had a lot of friendlies. You know, it's been teams going out to tour the various Southeastern Asian countries. There have been teams that have gone to Australia, and there's still a number of teams, English, Spanish, or otherwise, that have made their way through the United States and had their series of friendlies that they've had that may or may not been coordinated or one-off, Mark. You've had ugly moments such as Inter Miami getting dunked on by Barcelona in a game that Phil Neville called the biggest game in club history. And meanwhile, you've gotten, you know, a few of the bigger clubs being given bloody noses, like Minnesota United, who obviously beat Everton, thereby ensuring that they're going to get relegated. And at the same time, you had Reynoso exiting that game with an injury. So I think it brings up, Mark, the annual discussion that we need to have as a soccer nation about whether or not these are productive. If the MLS team wins, then ultimately we can just say, oh, the non-MLS team was clearly in preseason mode. This doesn't really count. If the MLS team loses or absolutely gets embarrassed, then haha, this is an indication that clearly MLS is inferior. And obviously, this comes with the fact that clubs, the MLS team, which is usually hosting these games, try to take advantage from a financial standpoint to cash in on these opportunities. You know, we look at the LA Galaxy having their starting ticket prices a number of years ago when they played Manchester United at the sold-out Rose Bowl. It was something like $150 for the cheapest ticket, and parking was almost going for that much as well. And so, is it a cash grab? Yes. Is it also an opportunity for the big European teams to get their name out there and to make themselves more available to people around the world who maybe don't have the opportunity to come visit them in their home nation for their domestic competitions? Also, yes, both of those things can be true. Mark, why are these things still a thing? And given that the last two times that the Rapids have really done it, it was when it was immediately advantageous with playing Boca Juniors, and the other one was obviously set up for KSC to double dip on the money standpoint. How do we feel about European friendlies? Why are these still a thing? And are we glad that the Rapids are not participating in this mishiver?
What's a mishiver?
You don't know what a mishiver? Maybe I'm mispronouncing it.
Is it Irish? Is it Gaelic? Is it Yiddish? Is it an attempt by an Irishman to speak Yiddish? What is it? A meshiver.
Meshiver.
Matt's Googling for it. Matt's Googling for it. I want to know this word because I need a bigger vocabulary.
It's in one of the mummy movies. This does not seem to be such a word in the English, Arabic, or Hebrew language, but there is an Arabic word called meshifer, which means code. It may have figured out the actual makes sense in the context of the season. Okay, I completely misused a word that I heard in pop culture from a movie that means absolutely not what I was thinking of. Okay, Mark, what do we make of European friendlies?
I understand the impetus by teams to feel like they need to make money. And I think both for American teams and for European teams, hypothetically speaking, every dollar you put into your coffers allows you to sign better transfer targets, hypothetically allows you to improve the stadium amenities, including the food. So I'm not in theory opposed to these things, but we know that at this stage of capitalism, usually like 9/10 of the monies that I just suggested go right into the owner's pocket, and only the other 1/10 comes back to the club, especially when you're talking about a certain cronky sports entertainment that seems to spend only on very specific things which don't include stadium amenities beyond like bare bones nachos. So that being said, like the ones that like I've noticed are my friend Marcus Rubenstein, who's a rabbi in Minnesota. He's the other soccer rabbi at this point, although he's the junior soccer rabbi to my senior soccer rabbi. He was absolutely over the moon happy about Minnesota playing Everton. I mean, he is both a Minnesota and an Everton fan. So this was like kid in a candy store time for him. The other one that I thought was really interesting, Matt, that you should, if you haven't looked this up online, holding the Highline fans, you should check this out. Go look at video of the Real Madrid Club America match that took place at AT&T Park in San Francisco. Stadium holds, for baseball, it holds like 50, 60,000, something like that, maybe 40.
I think it's 45, Mark.
45? 80% of the crowd was there for Club America, which, considering Real Madrid is arguably one of the biggest clubs in the world, it's really kind of a remarkable thing to see how big Liga MX is in California. So those are the kind of reasons why I think this thing could persist. The only criticism I have, which is really arguable, and our fans can totally get on us for this, and you can get on me for this, Matt, you always get on me for everything anyways. But like, I kind of miss the ICC because it had structure. Do you know what I mean? Like the ICC was, granted, it was ridiculous structure, right? Like the games could take place in Tokyo in the middle of the night, or, you know, LA Dodger Stadium, or they could take place in, you know, on a barge in Kuala Lumpur. And as long as the teams were ginormous and Ronaldo got 5 minutes on the pitch, like it was good enough. But at least hypothetically, there was like a structure where some of the teams played in kind of a round robin format, and there was a cup to award. And yeah, it didn't really mean much. It was like preseason and it was still a cash grab. But ultimately, like, it was a cash grab that sort of had like organization and structure. And I think I liked that better than what we have now, which is MLS teams doing straight cash grab FC in the middle of the season. I guess this year, because the Rapid season is rapidly, no pun intended, unraveling and becoming irrelevant, I kind of feel bad that we didn't play like Arsenal or Real Madrid or Club America, because we, you know, the only argument you have for Minnesota United not playing that game against Everton is that they're in a competitive season and this is sapping their energy and their strength for real meaningful games. The Rapids, meanwhile, I don't know if we are currently playing meaningful games. I mean, that's a conversation we'll have down the road. But like, in terms of where is the Rapids season at? We had a Jassy's Artist DEFCON thing going for a couple weeks, but we've moved the needle, I think, agreeably down on Jassy's Artist's DEFCONiness because he's doing pretty well. But the Rapid Season DEF CON has been moved up significantly. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I would have been okay if the Rapids played one of these meaningless friendlies, because got to make that paper, baby.
The ICC was nice, Mark, in that it provided structure for the European teams. But obviously the clubs, the MLS teams, the domestic teams that were included on that were mostly handpicked. And it was mostly based on the, I don't know if this is the ICC or the actual European teams being like, hey, we want to play in this particular market. Where's the closest MLS team that we can play? So it's like, hey, yeah, we really want to play a game in Seattle because we know they have a big stadium and we know it'll sell out. Okay, let's schedule the game against the Sounders. The Sounders are now playing in the ICC. And so obviously, I don't remember what the exact structure was, but you play in that and then you win. And then at some point, I think in one formation, in one iteration, there was a group stage. And then the others, it was just straight knockout. And in theory, there was a final with a trophy at the end of it. And so you keep adding these games onto it that maybe make things a little bit more complicated for the MLS team that manages to randomly win, like when the LA Galaxy B team beat the Juventus B team randomly off of like two goals after the 80th minute at Dodger Stadium in a pitch setup that was only slightly better to the postage stamp you have for the up in the Bronx at NYCFC. So I liked it, Mark, in that there was an actual structure to where there was something, and then the teams that actually either took it seriously or played their stars or tried to do something in the game and not treat it as a training exercise with paid spectators was nice. But obviously that structure was limited in terms of which MLS teams were involved, and the rest of them were basically 1v1, both negotiations and then one-offs in terms of their friendlies with the MLS team. And so it was kind of, from a Rapid standpoint, geographically, you're either dependent on a team that specifically wants to come to altitude, or you're dependent on maybe one of the European teams that maybe wants to start west, gradually work their way back east, and then take, you know, something of a puddle jumper, a lake jumper between, you know, maybe the northeast where they play one final friendly and then go back to England or Spain or Germany or what have you. I still see why they exist based on what their purpose is and everything. I just don't give a whole lot of energy to them. In which case, then, if something significant happens, either in terms of a signing happening and then a player getting debuted or doing something, then usually social media will tell me what is happening with that. I don't go down the rabbit hole on a Saturday morning during the European season to see what the Yanks are doing with Yanks abroad and everything. If Brendan Aaronson scores a banger, within 2 hours, somebody on social media, you know, the algorithm is going to make it such that I find out about it, or I find out about it on a podcast episode, you know, Monday, Tuesday of the following week. So similarly, I didn't watch a single minute of these. Fatmob told me that Christian Pulisic started and played in the game against Chelsea, and I think he scored a goal in that 1-1 draw that then Charlotte won on penalties. And then obviously, you know, I eventually saw Inter Miami get thrashed after everybody dunked on Phil Neville for the second time after he said that a game that had no purpose in a year in which they probably won't make the playoffs somehow was their biggest game in their club's history, as opposed to an actual competitive game to making the playoffs and being somewhat relevant other than having cool kits and being in Miami and having David Beckham in their ownership group. Anything else we want to say about international friendlies?
Yeah, one last thing. This is actually the time of year when I'm really paying attention to the international game, but specifically the UEFA game, because this is, unfortunately, it's not often. Usually they televise one select game per round, but it's really a good part of the season. We're in the early rounds of what is referred to as UEFA Champions League qualifying, which is all of the little tiny small league countries have their qualifying. So, and we're down to the final two rounds, at which the final 10 teams will be placed into the CCL pot, or sorry, the UCL pot. Yesterday, Olympiakos, the Greek champions, were defeated 4-0 at home by Maccabi Haifa, the Israeli champions from last year, which was a big upset, I think, for a lot of people. But there are all these little clubs, little teams, who are, and some of them are kind of historic and bigger, but they're like, they need to win a home and home series in order to slip into UCL and make that paper. Because this is like the biggest amount of money that these teams are ever going to be able to make. They're going to, you know, some of them are going to be drawn into a group with PSG or Arsenal or Manchester City. And it's like, it's a huge opportunity for them. It is like FA Cup levels of exciting. So if you get a chance to watch Victoria Pilsen or Dinamo Zagreb or Union Saint-Gilloise or Benfica versus Midtjylland of the Danish league, right? Or my own favorite that's going to come up next Wednesday, Maccabi Haifa at home against Apollon Limassol of the Cypriot league. Like, those are huge games for these countries. These are the biggest, to some degree, these are the biggest games in Europe for some of these countries. Like, everyone in Cyprus is going to be watching this game, and everyone in Israel is going to be watching that game. And I will be blessed for the return leg. I will be in Israel to see that match. So it should be really fun to see Haifa play Apollon Limassol in the home place. You, Matt, I think are probably going to be pulling really hard for Dinamo Kyiv over Sturm Graz, the rivals to Rapid Vienna.
Yes, of course. Thank you very much on that. Last thing I'll say, Mark, since we transitioned this from European friendlies to European group stage competition qualifiers, Royal Antwerp won their second leg against Drita earlier today. They won that on aggregate 2-0 with a 2-0 scoreline earlier today. Sam Vine subbed on late in that game, and then they moved on to the third and final round of qualification for the group stage for the Europa Conference League. They'll be taking on Lillestrøm on Thursday, August 4th, and then the following week on the 11th, Lillestrøm are out of Norway, which I think is either the Allsvenskan or the other one that I can't remember. The LA Terrestin, I think is what it's called. So
Eliteserien, I think it's pronounced. But I'm with you. I'm with you. It's too much soccer. It's actually, we're re-entering the phase of our lives, Matt, which is not healthy for either of us, which is the too much soccer phase. The Apertura is kicking off on Friday. The DFB Pokal kicks off, so you can watch German soccer as it kind of roars back to life. There's a lot of good stuff coming up. We're through the tough part of our lives when all there is on a Saturday morning is a few measly MLS games that don't start until 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yes, so just two more games away, and Sam Vines will be playing European football. Unfortunately, folks, with the Feyenoord qualified for Europa League, so there's no chance for us to have a Sam Vines, Cole Bassett, Rapids Abroad derby just yet. But in any case, we'll see whether or not Antwerp can do that, Mark, and try and win something in the third tier of international competition at the club level on the European continent. And then obviously Cole Bassett scored a pretty nice goal the other day. I don't know if you saw that, Mark, in a friendly, as he continues to fight for maybe playing minutes, given it looks like he's now not being loaned out. Listeners, this past Saturday at Lumen Field, CenturyLink Stadium, the Colorado Rapids were once again defeated by the Seattle Sounders in that fixture by a score of 2-1. The Rapids were a little bit shorthanded in this game. Danny Wilson was suspended for yellow card accumulation, and then Sam Nicholson and Steven Badischer relatively late scratches in the week as they were in the MLS health and safety protocol, likely due to either testing positive or having a contact tracing symptomatic situation with COVID-19, which is still a thing. 3 minutes in, Mark, despite Seattle having most of the ball at that point, Jonathan Lewis gets the PIDs on the board, rounding Stefan Fry and then scoring Diego Rubio with a great through ball to set that up. At the Roldan brother, Alex, almost cleared that ball off the line, but it did just barely go over. Nice play by J. Lou on that one. Some ticky-tack fouls that are called by a relatively young referee, Mark. The Colorado Rapids absorbing a lot of pressure. Lyles Dubukar leading the emergency defending front and energy and intensity and interruptions going on. Jordan Morris with a was the straw stirring the drink for the Seattle Sounders. First two really big opportunities you had for the Sounders before the floodgates opened came in the 41st minute off of a corner. Yamar Gomez Andrade, the center back, has a shot that is blocked by Lewis, not quite off the line. Lewis was a few yards up from the goal line, and then moments later, with the ball recycled into the box, Yamar going to the back post with a diving header that he puts over the bar and then does the full surrender cobra, two hands on his head in absolute shock. And then 2 minutes later, Mark, it was Robin Fraser and the Rapids bench that was shocked on 43 minutes, 1-1 from Jordan Morris. Lyles Dubukar, in air quotes, fouls Will Bruin, near the midfield line, well within the Colorado Rapids defending half. In that sequence, Lalas Abubakar plays the ball to Diego Rubio in a bang-bang play in which Rubio then tries to play the ball forward as the whistle is fouled. Somehow certain people on Sounders Twitter, who may or may not be in the leadership role at One Sports Blog Nation, Mark, were under the impression that that was the Rapids intentionally trying to delay the restart. In any case, about 15 yards, 20 yards, depends on who you ask, the ball is played away from where the foul originally occurred. It goes forward quickly in succession. Great play by Jordan Morris, regardless of everything that had happened up to that point, to get past Lalas Abubakar, who'd been having a fantastic 42 minutes, and to beat William Yarbrough to make it 1-1. Mark, we'll get into this in a bit. I have a quote from my pool reporter question and then a pretty savage or damning statement from Pro on Twitter about that. In any case, it is 1-1 at halftime. The Rapids are lucky to get out of Dodge with that, given how much Seattle dominated play after the Rapids opened the scoring 3 minutes in. Just a minute into the second half, Lucas Estevez with a great chance on the counter that leads to a ball going out for a throw-in that Kellen Rowe tosses over the advertising board, slips out of his hands, and he is given a second yellow for time wasting on that. And then, Mark, I would say it was a relatively even play from that point on, despite the Seattle Sounders being down a man, a bunch of chances for Jordan Morris. Ultimately, in the 69th minute, he creates a really good chance in transition. He gets a shot. Yarbrough saves it. The rebound comes out to Jordan Morris. Yarbrough comes off his line to challenge. He takes down Jordan Morris. Penalty. Nico Lodero converts in the 71st minute. And that's all I have on the rundown, Mark, because I would say that the Rapids were impotent at best in the final 20 minutes plus stoppage time. Mark, do we want to start with the officiating? Because then I can go through all of that spiel if you want.
Oh, man. And this is the rare opportunity to get me with my dander up about officiating. I really don't like complaining about officiating. This game was not well officiated in all respects. I didn't really look very closely at Lalas Abubakar's quote unquote air quotes foul, except that someone pointed out really well that the ball is cleared away. And it had to be retrieved, which is a really strong way of indicating that the player got the ball, and therefore it's not a foul, right? And if you look at the play close enough, it wasn't much of a foul there. That wasn't really the problem, though, because a miscalled foul, all right, fine. The biggest problem, of course, is that the play is reset, like, what, 30 yards away from where it was originally supposed to be set?
I'm saying 15, Mark. We had very, very faint football lines, and I'd say 15 to 20.
All right, 20. We'll go 20. It's really, really far away, and when you go down a really long rabbit hole with Jeremiah Oshan and Connor Cape and a couple other Sounders fan 8435021, you know, like, about how far away exactly is inappropriate, and is the referee obligated to blow their whistle? Now, I looked at the rule. The rule is FIFA Law 13.2, and the law about a foul is really clear, which is, and it's really literal. It basically says the ball is to be replayed on a direct kick from the point of the foul, right? It doesn't say 5 yards from the foul. It doesn't say 10 yards from the foul. It definitely doesn't say 20 yards from the foul. Now, one could argue that a referee has the leeway to say, like, all right, close enough, right? I would argue, and this was the part that blew my mind in the Twitter argument that I was having with other folks, I would argue that no one in their right mind would say that the place at which the ball was restarted was the right place to replay the ball, which then gave Seattle an unfair advantage because they could restart unfairly. Now, the several Seattle fans that I spoke with were basically arguing to the counter. Well, the Rapids were caught asleep, and that's, you know, that's their fault. You can't be caught asleep, and my analogy here was this. You can't be caught asleep if, for instance, the referee says, okay, it's a throw-in, and you walk to the center of the field and then throw the ball in. And the reason that that's the analogy is because no one expects you to throw the ball from the center of the field because you're not allowed to do it, right? No one expects the free kick to originate 20 yards from where it's supposed to start, and the Rapids aren't to be expected or aren't to be castigated for being caught unawares at that point, because no sane individual would have ever assumed that the ball would have been played from that place, nor would any sane individual have assumed that a competent pro referee would allow the ball to be replayed from that point without pulling the whistle to his lips, his or her lips, and then blowing, because that's what they should have done. Now, that being said, I will then point out the other thing that I said on Twitter, which is, yeah, that call was blown, and they got an unfair goal. But a few minutes later, after the half, Kellen Rowe got a second yellow, which I thought was a little soft, to be honest. I mean, he does kind of delay the game by throwing the ball up over the hoarding, but on the flip side, like, it's not like he didn't like throw it 30 yards into the field. It was like, you know, the side kid could have thrown the ball in or whatever. So he gets his second yellow, and the Rapids have a 10-man advantage for the next 40 minutes, and they do nothing with it. Bubkis, Gornish, zip, zero, nada, zilch. And the team has become fairly impotent. And to go back a little bit on what I said, for the team to rely on this excuse of one kicked call by a referee ruining the game for them is a pretty soft way to look at the Colorado Rapids season at this point. They, going back to the beginning of May through 13 games, we have just 3 wins. Going back to the beginning of the season, we have 0 wins on the road. And I think somebody else posted, I think it was Joe Samuelson, posted that the Rapids have 4 games in a row in which they've been up a man on a red card and have lost, which is kind of mind-boggling. Like, this team is in really bad shape, and their officiating is not the cause of all of our maladies at this point.
All well said there, Mark. I'm just going to... The officiating, normally, the one thing that we complain about, the first thing that we complain about when it comes to the official is that the official is not consistent. The official is not consistent within time, and the official is not consistent between teams or points on the field. I felt, for all of his faults on the night, Rosendo Mendoza, for the most part, was consistent in terms of he called a really tight game. Now, I think he was calling a lot of things that were not fouls as fouls, or things that I wouldn't consider fouls, even just the slightest contact or the appearance of contact fouls. I think there was a point where, I don't remember the Rapids player, it might have been Barrios, it might have been somebody else, somebody on the Rapids right side put a slight hand to the back of Nico Lodero in the Rapids defensive third. Lodero goes down and then calls the foul. So make what you will of the officiating. I thought the Sounders quickly realized how the game was going to be officiated and then adjusted to it in order to take advantage of it. And the Rapids, in that regard, allowed themselves to get CONCACAF, did not adjust to the officiating in the same way that the Seattle Sounders did. So if we're giving the referee the benefit of the doubt that even the slightest contact with the apparent of physicality or, you know, using that in order to go through a player to get the ball, I want to give thought experiment, Mark. I'm going to give the official the benefit of the doubt that that was a foul. Now, when I initially saw it in real time, I saw both of them going down. I would have thought, oh, okay, Lal Sabubakar won the foul. And when he initially blew the whistle, I thought that's a little bit weird because you'd figure the ball going to Diego Rubio, who could then take a touch, turn up field in transition in a game where he already has an assist in transition. Why aren't you playing advantage? And okay, maybe he's awarding a yellow card to, or giving a yellow card to Will Bruin for that. You know, but if anything, I saw it as a 50-50 challenge. Abubakar was first to the ball. He won the ball with that. If anything, it's no foul, or if anything, a foul on Will Bruin. But let's assume given the way that the game was being officiated, that it actually was a foul. To the Sounders fan that is arguing that the Rapids were intent in playing the ball away from the initial spot to prevent a quick restart, and then the Rapids to, and then Seattle taking a quick restart from further away from goal was two wrongs canceling each other out. I think I've already implied, if you go back and you look at it, Abubakar plays the ball, and then it's not until maybe right after or right before the ball gets to Diego Rubio that the whistle is actually blown. Rubio is looking at the ball, not looking at the official. He's probably not seeing him put his hand to his mouth to blow the whistle, or the actual hand motion to indicate which way the foul is going, at which point Rubio's already played the ball. He's thinking and focused on that. So I think that negates any intent of, oh, you know, the Rapids clearly were trying to delay the restart. And yes, it was disadvantageous from Seattle in that it was further away from goal. But again, they were taking it quickly. And to your point, Mark, they were taking it in a way to where the Rapids were caught unawares because they weren't expecting it. The analogy I would use, Mark, that I would say is maybe as apropos as yours about taking a throw in from the center field of you don't expect. It's hard to say the players were caught napping on a corner that was taken quickly if the corner was taken 20 yards away from the actual corner spot where the play was supposed to be taken. So
yeah.
So I think all of that is valid, and regardless, great play by Jordan Morris, and maybe somewhere in there we could have assumed that Lalas Abubakar or William Yarbrough could have done more in the actual sequence. And I think the only reason that this play is controversial in that is because, one, by VAR, that play is not reviewable. The spot of the ball and it being valid in terms of where the free kick is taken relative to the foul in a play that is not a potential penalty, because obviously you know, this foul occurred well outside the box, and that was not a reviewable situation. The play could not be reviewed by VAR. Now, where the question then is, how far after the play, you know, taking place, resuming, come to conclusion with the ball coming in the net, is the referee allowed to say, no, you should retake it? And is that the job of the head referee? Should the fourth official have said something? Should the linesman, who was on the Rapids attacking half of the field, so further away but much closer than the AR on the other side of the field, you know, could have said or done something? And is the only reason this is controversial, or where there maybe wasn't bravery to make a big decision like that, is because ultimately it would have taken a goal off the board for a particular team playing in a particular stadium with a particular type of crowd. I'm not saying anything in there. You infer what you want with dots that I'm definitely not connecting there, folks. But so... So let's get to my pool reporter question, Mark, and we'll transition this also into the I agree with you on the Kellen Rowe red card that should not have been. So initial question was about the free kick and level of judgment, or if there's an actual defined distance between that that is allowed or wiggle room from pro. So at the moment the free kick was taken by Seattle, it was felt that the ball was within an acceptable distance from the location of the foul. And then regarding the second yellow card, delaying a restart is a point of emphasis this season. That's been decreed by Pro, that we knew about that earlier on in the year. Kellen Rowe tossed the ball over the advertising board when it was not his team's throw-in. I had some tweets on that. If you want to see that, folks, I take exception to using the verb tossed in that particular situation. But so then, Mark, we get to the day after stuff has come out with the pool report, and then after the various weekends of Pro reviewing various calls and everything. And so we get this quote tweet from Pro at Pro Referees on Twitter, blue check mark. This is Pro's official account, folks, not a parody account. Pro can confirm that an officiating error occurred in hashtag SEA versus COL in MLS week 22. The free kick that started the move leading to the Jordan Morris goal for Seattle was taken from the wrong position and should have been retaken. This play was not reviewable within VAR protocols. So I think that speaks for itself, Mark. I look forward to this being a learning moment for Rosendo Mendoza, all of the other officials involved, and maybe people generally in pro, given that Mendoza also officiated the Portland Timbers Rapids game earlier this season at Providence Park, Mark, that also had some 50-50, some iffy refereeing calls and everything. And so I look forward to this being something that changes differently, and maybe having a little bit more intent and a little more bravery, or maybe even so much as Pro saying that, you know, there's an actual wiggle room and that's more like 5 yards. And if it's anything more than that, the referee can blow the whistle at any time and say, retake the free kick, even after the play has been resumed and ultimately resulting in the ball going in the back of the net. But kind of my big point here, Mark, from a bad standpoint, is ultimately the officiating was bad on multiple accounts. Ultimately, it was fair in that they canceled each other out, and it was ultimately irrelevant because the Rapids were piss poor up a goal and 11-11 in the first half of the game, and they were barely better than the Seattle Sounders up a man and ultimately deserved to lose the game in that regard. Mark, the only really good things I have is Jonathan Lewis getting another goal contribution. Great goal by him to start the game. And that was now his third goal contribution in two games because he had assists in the 2-0 win. He had two assists in the 2-0 win over the LA Galaxy. And I thought Lalas Abubakar really stepped up from a defensive and a management standpoint and an individual performance standpoint, given the absence of Danny Wilson and maybe the lack of structure that the Rapids had at times against a Nico Lodero, against a Christian Roldan, certainly against a Jordan Morris, who was the man of the match for me. But those are hollow good things, giving everything else that went bad for the Rapids, both in the first and in the second half. Mark, anything else you want to say, or shall we move on to big things?
I don't know that I have much other than what I've said, which is like our big things are like we're regressing as a team. We're not progressing on the road. And I don't understand why road games are so difficult for this team. They look a little bit different on the road. They look less confident. They look more, I don't know. I feel like I'm falling into a rut with what I'm saying, but I have a feeling that's because the Rapids are falling into a rut with the way they're playing, which is we like to go down the sides. And we like to swing in long balls or diagonal balls. Getting into zone 14 on the road is really, really rare. It just doesn't happen very often. So it's a thing where we need to look more dynamic in the attack, and we need to give a different looks, especially on the road, because I think the team does look typically pretty decent at home. But you know, this is the big thing right now. And at this point, it's really, you know, all that matters in the season, considering this team is, like, rapidly running out of... I keep using the word rapidly. What the hell is wrong with me, Matt? It's not an intentional pun, people. I'm not trying to do this. We're running out of opportunities. The team only has 6 home games left, which means, you know, if we're going to lose all our road games or only get a point from some of our road games here and there, like, it's just there's not enough points available in just home games to make the playoffs at this rate. So they need to start learning to win on the road. And I don't know if they can. Their next opportunity comes very soon. They play New York Red Bull next Tuesday, August 2nd.
My big thing from this game, Mark, after the red card, the Colorado Rapids had an XG of 24.85%. So taking up all of their chances and then all of the probability of those chances, the Rapids had a 24.85% chance of scoring a goal. Seattle Sounders 24.75% without the penalty. So from the run of play, the Colorado Rapids were statistically insignificantly better in outplaying the Seattle Sounders, despite the Sounders being down a man. And fundamentally, Mark, this is a team that in good opportunities to pick up points on the road and in good opportunities to win road games, something they have not done yet this season, they have been unable to do it. And I think if there was an obvious answer or a single thing that they were doing wrong that was easily fixable in terms of their road performances, I think they would have addressed it by now and ultimately gotten that first dub on the road. You know, I think, Mark, if we look back and this team ultimately ends up missing the playoffs by a handful of points, or God forbid ends up winning the Wooden Spoon by a handful of points, you know, we're going to look back at William Yarbrough's back pass out at Houston where, you know, 1 point should have been 3, or this game where certainly you would have thought, you know, 1-1 with Seattle and then 45 minutes up a man, it should have been very easy to win that game 2-1, and they found ways to lose the game. This team has found ways to underperform in advantageous situations and game states on the road that has ultimately led to them dropping road points. And if they continue to be one of the worst road teams in MLS this season, I don't see a path forward in terms of them making the playoffs. So I guess I'll go out here and guarantee it, Mark. If the Rapids do not win a road game this season, I do not see how they will not make the playoffs.
For fans who have not been paying attention for a couple seasons or are newish to soccer, Matt is referencing an individual by the name of Ben Baer, formerly of Major League Soccer, who used to not guarantee things, but rather guarantee them, B-A-E-R. We don't know where Ben Baer has gone into that great soccer podcasting guy position in the sky. We do not, he's not dead. He's just not working for Major League Soccer anymore. But I love that Matt is using references that our new fans just probably have never heard of and have no idea about.
According to his Twitter page, Mark, he's with BetMGM, so maybe doing some betting MLS stuff or soccer stuff. He was working for Austin FC in their analytics department at one point post MLS. But in any case, that's in the past. Mark, Ask HDHL that we have from our good friend Rapids Foreign Legion at CR Foreign Legion on Twitter. Gentlemen, below is an illustration of how the rumbling sound of thunder, and he's got some weird sound waves with a guy sitting in a grass field and then stormy clouds above in the sky and the Rapids logo's up there. In any case, are you hearing the rumblings of thunder from the Rapids for making a move in the narrowing transfer window? Mark, we're talking today on Thursday, July 28th, the secondary transfer window for Major League Soccer closes 1 week from today, folks. So August 4th, Barack Obama and my dad's birthday, for those who are wondering. So, Mark, they've got a week left in the window. I've got to be honest, I'm hearing very little Rapids Forward Legion and nothing concrete in terms of names. They were open earlier in this window to trying to get some center back help. I think the increasing health and fitness of Danny Wilson has maybe pulled them off from that, because I don't think they wanted to make a short-term answer at the center, make a short-term signing at the center back role, when I think they believe internally that the long-term third center back option already exists within the roster, likely in the form of either Gustavo Villasia or Abubakar Keita, possibly Mike Edwards in 2 to 3 years. I don't think Mike Edwards is going to be starting, you know, as the defender of the year for the Colorado Rapids in 2023. But do you make a short-term signing for this versus knowing that the long-term goal of the club or health of the club at the center back position is likely healthy? I think the other variable in that is that Robin Fraser has mostly had them go back to a back four, and they've mostly been stable from that standpoint. Danny Wilson's been solid and mistake-free. Laws Abubakar has played well with and without Danny Wilson in the lineup with that. And Lucas Estevez, for as much as we talk about him as being a wingback, I think has been, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, I think he's been good in the attack, but then also provided some effort defensively. So that hasn't led to maybe a loss in production or, you know, expected XG or contributions to the team from him having a back two of center backs rather than three center backs behind him to go forward. And Keegan Rosenberry is fantastic in a back five or in a back three, center back, right wing back, in any case. So I think that's negated any real move at the center back role. Obviously, Sam Nicholson, I think, was their one attacking option. They were offered by Toronto FC Io Akinola as one of the pieces in the trade for Marc-Anthony Kane. They were not interested in him. He was not one of the three players that the Rapids put on their list of Toronto FC players that they were interested in. Ralph Prizzo obviously was one of them. They were also interested in Jalen Lindsay. I haven't been able to pick out who that third one is from any of my reporting folks, but I was not Io Akinola, so they're not looking to add in another striker. They think it's Rubio and Giassi Zardes. The one wide player that they added and were going to add was going to be Sam Nicholson. Now, where you look at is really in the midfield position, and I haven't heard anything concrete, Mark. That doesn't mean that nothing is happening. Most of the moves that the Rapids have made recently in the Let Port Cook era of the club have either been super slow burns, where they wanted Kellen Acosta for almost two full transfer windows before they got him, or ones have been rather suddenly, where it's a player who they've been interested in, they've been monitoring, but that hasn't necessarily been long-term communication, and then it's kind of quickly, okay, we have an internal idea of what the valuation of this player is, the two clubs make contact, and then something happens in 24 to 72 hours, maybe. Maybe the Marc-Anthony Kane trade this time last year was a relatively quick option that was happening. You know, the Rapids were not inquiring every single day about Marc-Anthony Kane in the summer of 2020. They weren't calling, you know, they weren't calling John Thorington at LAFC every single day in January of 2021. But other moves that they've wanted, Keegan Rosenberry, Kellen Acosta, they've acquired a transfer window, two transfer windows prior to the actual trading and acquisition of those players. But I think it all comes down to, Mark, that you know, it's pretty quiet. I think in hindsight, maybe we were trying to speak Latif Blessing into existence, and there hasn't been a whole lot of stuff going on there. The few reports that have been there by very not credible anonymous sources on Twitter have been that there have been Eastern Conference teams interested in him. And I'm starting to wonder, Mark, I can say this definitively, you know, if there's no moves that are made at this point, you know, I have to really question, is the club looking at then saying, okay, the moves that we were going to make are going to be in January, or that they're not giving up on this season, but they're not willing to make a move to try and salvage this season at the expense of flexibility going forward in terms of the long-term health of the club. And I think that's maybe a measured long-term answer, but maybe is incongruent, or at the very least complicated given Port Smith's recent comments after the trade of Mark Anthony Kay, and just given how, you know, this rapid season is rapidly fizzling out and the lack of adding reinforcements when other teams are bolstering in the Western Conference, you know, is frustrating given the financial circumstances for the team and given that you just, you know, that you just got a huge haul for Mark Anthony Kay and you think that would give you the financial flexibility to then go make a move.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start there, Matt. Are we going to have another move of consequence? No, I don't think so. I just don't think this team is built for this year right now. There are a number of senior contracts that are going to be expiring in the offseason that are either not likely to be renewed or not likely to be of consequence. Guys like Michael Barrios, Stephen Betashore, Clint Irwin, Drew Moore, Jossie Zardes, who we probably won't be going back to get again, depending on how his production turns out, because he's kind of expensive. Colin Werner. And then there's a whole lot of young guys who the question is like, all right, what veteran pieces do you put around these guys to help them succeed next year? Where does Sebastian Anderson kind of rate with this team? How much recovery has Brian Galvan had? Are either Philip Mayaka or Ralph Prizo ready to be every day, every game starters in this league? Like, how much was left in the tank for guys like Keegan Rosenberry, right? Like, you've got to get a whole kind of core of players in their prime at like 24, 25, 26. And the strange thing about this Colorado Rapids team as it's currently configured right now is there's like no guys like that on this team right now. This roster is really heavy on players 21 and lower and players 29 and over. There's very few guys in the middle, and those guys are basically named Lalas Abubakar. That's pretty much it. Like, it's now that Austin Trusty is gone, you know, you're really short on those key players. That, I think, to me means that, Matt, this season's a wash. Like, even if Porik Smith added two more players before August 4th, which is next Thursday, it's a week from today, it just doesn't feel like enough to swing this team around. It feels like the moves that need to be made are for, you make summer moves so that guys can settle in for the new season come next spring. So I think that that's where this team needs to be. The other thing that needs to happen is the European windows need to all slam closed so that that Porik Smith is in a situation, which he often is at this time of the year, where he sees European teams who are playing musical chairs and players on those teams who have lost the last round, right? Their chair has been pulled out from under them. They either don't have a club or their club finds them expendable, right? They're going to go out on loan. They're going to be cut loose altogether, or they're going to wind up in the, you know, Thai Premier League, or, you know, in some like backwater, unless Porik can kind of pluck them and put them to good use here in the United States. So that's where I think we are. We're starting to look at pulling bodies off the heap as opposed to looking for pieces that are going to jolt this team from 12th to 7th. Because I don't think those pieces exist, and I don't think we're willing to pay the price for them. The other piece is, like, the last thing here is that, like, you know, you're talking about potentially, because I said, I really highlighted the fact that we've got young pieces and we've got old pieces and not a lot in the middle. If you want to be competitive right now, Matthew, you have to sacrifice some of the young pieces for some of those middle-aged pieces who are in their prime right now. And I don't even know if we wanted to, which is a question, I don't know what we've got to offer, right? Like, which of our guys below the age of 22 is a guy you could flip to another team and say, give me your best 25-year-old right now because this guy's going to be great? I mean, and if you flip enough GAM, like, what's going to bring that guy over? What, you're going to offer him Gustavo Villasia, who can't crack our starting lineup? You're going to offer them Lucas Estevez, who's our starting left back, who is a nice, young, talented player, but shows real defensive liabilities, right? He's a wonderful attacking player, but he's probably as good as a left midfielder as he would be, way better than he would be an actual left back. You're going to flip him Sebastian Anderson, who's basically incapable of cracking the first team lineup and has been, you know, down with Rapids 2, losing game after game after game by huge margins, right? Darren Yapi, Dumundi Yaya Toure, Michael Evans, Anthony Markanet, right? Like, there's a long list of guys who don't rate. Like, at this point, Matt, the only thing I can hope for is that Ale Larraz comes back healthy before his time and has just had a firecracker lit under his tuchus and comes right onto the field and decides to absolutely be, you know, Paul Scholes. Like, that's our hope at this point. Ale Larraz is the resurrected body of Paul Scholes. That's our hope for the final end of the season. And I don't think that's likely. I've lost my mind. I've just started screaming into the microphone in total abandonment.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody over the weekend on this, Mark, and thinking, you know, let's say the back four ends up working and Danny Wilson and Lalas Abubakar have their best third of the season in this upcoming final third of the season. And let's say everybody stays healthy. Let's say Jack Price actually comes back from his calf injury. He's still doing work on his own, folks. You know, let's say that Ralph Prizzo's arrival in terms of the second half of the season is as big as Kellen Acosta's arrival was to the Rapids in 2018. Let's say Giassi Zardes goes on a tear. Jonathan Lewis consistently contributes. Diego Rubio is secretly the number 10, then okay, I could see it where, Mark, you're one Latif Blessing signing and then everything else going as well as possible away from getting like the sixth or the seventh seed. I could be talked into that situation, but if any one of those goes wrong, realistically, you need two impact signings and two immediately impact signings that are going to cost you within a week. So if I'm just throwing out names of, Mark, if you gave me these two guys and then two-thirds of the things that I just listed also happens. So one of, you know, like Jossie's artist playing really well, Lewis being consistent, Barros being consistent, the defense not being leaky defensively, not having any other injuries, Ale Larraz and Ralph Prizzo chipping in as young players, Jack Price, you know, getting his calf healthy. If I get two-thirds of those things and then two of these three players, I will say that I will predict the Rapids to make the playoffs. And so I wrote down Frankie Amaya, who hasn't super well fit in since Caden Clark's return to New York Red Bulls, and obviously Amaya was super unhappy at FC Cincinnati. That would cost you a pretty penny, given that he is relatively new to New York Red Bulls, and they don't sell on young guys on the low level. Paxton Pomykal, who I'm convinced at this point FC Dallas ownership should know, if the Colorado Rapids are calling you about a disgruntled player who hasn't had a perfect last 2 years and everything, you hang up the phone because you know that you're going to get fleeced, so that's not happening. And the other one, of course, is Latif Blessing. And if Mark Anthony Kay is worth $2 to $2.5 million in GAM equivalent assets, then Latif Blessing has to be at worth at least $1.2 to $1.3 million. And then you're giving up all of the GAM that you just got from Mark Anthony Kay. What else you were doing with that? So if you get me two of those three to rebolster the midfield in the next week, and then two-thirds of the other stuff from the attack and the health and the young guys and the defense and everything, all of that happens, can this team grind out to, you know, the seventh seed on decision day? I think absolutely. Are all of those things going to happen? Absolutely not. Am I convinced that any one of Latif Blessing, Frankie Amaya, or Paxton Pomykal will be announced on August 4th as members of the Colorado Rapids? No. So I hope we answered your question there, Rapids 4 and Legion.
Oh my God,
Because we talked a lot, but I'm not sure that we gave you anything definitive, given, you know, we're not breaking news like Tommy.
We're not getting any players. How's that? That's what we're, if we get any, they're not going to move the needle until 2023.
Okay. Mark, we do have one positive thing to talk about, albeit internally with our community. Mark, we've been discussing this internally. We would like to give back to our highliners, to the people who give us money to produce this podcast. We'd like to do that in the form of stuff behind the paywall so that they're paying for something that they get specifically for them. And Mark, we've decided on that every single annual highliner that we get in a year, and this is starting effectively immediately, folks, will be able to request an article topic to be at least 400, potentially no longer than 1,000 words, or potentially a private podcast episode that we'll post behind the paywall. There's a way for us to do post audio on our Substack as well to be at least 30 minutes in length, and so you can submit that to us. If you are an annual Highliner, you can do it for this year, and then if you renew with us for 2023, you can do another one. You are giving us money, and so thereby, we want to hear back from you the content that you want, and if you want something personalized or really specific that takes more than a couple minutes in the form of an AskHTHL or an email, we are happy to give you that content and give it to you exclusively. Rabbi, who are our current annual Highliners who are now immediately eligible for this in 2022?
All right, I'm gonna give some semi anonymity if they want it, but because I'm gonna use their first name in their email address. So Jody C. Robbins, Buegeb, Joe Samuelson, Joe Lowry, J. Dot McMahon, David Ellenberger, M. J. Newham, Matthew Pollard, yes, he's a Highliner. Alan Freisleben, Colin Peterson, David Azilis, I think it's B. Chinesi, Scott Wolfgang, D.F. Boniface, C.O. Matt Dog, and String BK. All y'alls are our featured Highliner subscribers. We really appreciate you all for contributing to us, and you guys can email us or text us, message us, and let us know, what would you like to see? Is there an article that you'd like to see us cover? Is there a player you'd like us to maybe try and interview? I've got an interview, Matt, coming for the Substack, and we're going to break out some of the audio if I can cut it into good, neat pieces. I did about a 25-minute interview with Jack Price last week, and even though he is bummed about being on the sidelines, ladies and gentlemen, he is, and folks of all backgrounds and ages, he is a wonderful interview. He was absolutely super fun, and we really enjoyed him, and we can't wait to bring that to all of you, and then stash a little bit of that interview behind the paywall to entice some of you folks who are kind of on the fence about kicking in a small monthly donation to us or an annual donation to just go whole hog and get all the benefits that come with being a Highliner. So if you have questions for us, if you have requests for us, if you'd like Matt to wear a silly outfit and dance down a major Colorado thoroughfare, let us know. We'll make sure it either happens or Matt will come after me with a butcher knife because I suggested it on air.
Listeners, this coming Tuesday at Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey. That's Tuesday, August 2nd at 5:30 p.m. The Colorado Rapids will be taking on New York Red Bulls for their first trip to RBA since COVID-19. And if I'm not mistaken, Mark, I believe this fixture was actually Robin Fraser's first game as the head coach of the Colorado Rapids, Jonathan Lewis scoring a brace in a 2-0 victory at RBA in that game. The Rapids are currently 12th in the Western Conference. They have 24 points off of 21 games played, a record of 6-9-6, a goal difference of -4, and then away from DSG this season, they are 0-7-3. New York Red Bulls currently third in the Eastern Conference. They have 36 points off of 22 games played. Mark, I don't know if you saw, they just had potentially the game of the year with a fantastic barn burner at Austin that they managed to win that game, which boosted their record to 10 wins, 6 losses, and 6 draws, a goal difference of +9, and then at home this season, they are 3-3-4. Mark, this is one of the better teams in the MLS Eastern Conference, and this is a team that is very New York Red Bulls. Gerhard Struber has this team playing like a meat truck that is actively trying to crash into you like Grand Theft Auto. Patrick Klamala up top, a bunch of young midfielders, Drew Yearwood, Caden Clark. They also have Lewis Morgan, who they got from Inter Miami. They have Frankie Amaya, who we've already talked about, Tom Barlow, who's been scoring goals off the bench for them as well, and then it's been Sean Nealis, who's kind of filled in at that center back role next to Aaron Long, who I think increasingly, Mark, should be in the conversation as a starting center back for the U.S. men's national team coming this World Cup. And then John Tolkien is kind of their big, flary, crazy-haired young gun at the left back position, and then Carlos Coronel is kind of their veteran goalkeeper as well. Similar energy from a shot stopping and a yelly organizational standpoint to William Yarbro, Mark, this is a very good team. This is a young team. This is a team that rotates a lot. They play with high energy. They are typical New York Red Bulls. And if you have a bad time playing through the press and then actually trying to get into the attacking third, like the Rapids struggled with when it was 11-on-11 against the Seattle Sounders, they will create turnovers, they will create chaos, and they will absolutely punish you for it. And they do it on a budget. Mark, what do we see in New York Red Bulls in general? And then given they're closer to your neck of the woods and you're, I feel like you're more plugged into RBNY than I am, Mark, given how much you watch them with Red Bulls 2 playing in the USL Championship. What do we make of this team, this season, and this fixture?
Well, the twos have been a little bit rough this year. They haven't... They've had an up and down year, and I think one of the things that's been contributing to that is Red Bull has turned over to so many young players over the last couple of years that the really good, talented Red Bull 2 players are now playing with the senior team. They're really, I think, punching above their weight. They're having a really good year. They are a little bit less plugged into the traditional RB Leipzig really aggressive forward pressing. I think they do it a little bit more to a balanced degree. They press, they high press really well, probably better than any team in Major League Soccer, but they don't do it as much as I think they used to. I used to, 3 or 4 years ago, expect that everything that they would do, as long as they were on 0-0 or 1-1, was going to be a high press. Now you see it in spots. Like, they really will choose to do it in certain situations, or maybe for the first 15 minutes of the game or the last 15 minutes of a half or something like that. Like, they'll choose it in spots. The other thing I just wanted to say, which is kind of remarkable, is my favorite player on this team is Luquinhas, who's been really exceptional in spots, but he's not playing every game. He's been, as you really well said, rotated a fair amount with this team. And that's because they want to give all these other guys opportunities. He's played most matches. He's played 19 of these matches, but he hasn't started every game. He didn't start the last match for them. And they've kind of used him just as much as a guy off the bench as they might as a starter. So a lot of really good squad rotation, a lot of depth to this team, which is kind of impressive and surprising. And I think the one thing you said nicely, that Drew Yearwood, 22 years old, English originally, is a defensive midfielder who really does a great job connecting with everybody else. The one player that I think has been, for me anyway, is kind of a disappointment is Caden Clark. He's kind of penciled in as their left winger. 8 matches, just 1 assist. FootMob has him at a 6.28 rating, because he's been a little bit sloppy in passing, hasn't really created a tremendous amount of offense and attack in his opportunities. So maybe he's kind of being passed over and moved on in some ways. But, like, you know, this team has a lot of other really fun players. I think the guy that jumps out at you more than anybody else is, you already mentioned him, Lewis Morgan, who has, I think, 9 goals. Is that correct? Boy, goodness, in just 20 matches. And he's not doing it from a position as a striker. He kind of comes typically kind of from a high position on the right side. But he's been really, you know, fire, real trouble for this team, creating trouble for other folks. So a really fantastic squad. They could really create problems for any team they face. They're what is referred to in soccer, I think, as a front-to-back defending team. They really, at all positions of the field, they're high energy. They're harassing, even though they are not necessarily high pressing in that sense. The defense starts kind of very, very high up the field, and they're very hard to play through all 11 players. So that's what to watch. They're also very good at home, although home crowds have been pretty lousy this year. And I actually think this is a little piece of MLS news, which is maybe not actually news because this kind of thing has been rumored for years, but NYCFC is rumored to be in kind of final talks to potentially build a new stadium by 2025 in Queens, just outside of the new Shea Stadium for the Mets, or Citibank Field, as I think it's called now. And I think that that's a really interesting and potentially bad move for Red Bull, because that's kind of the part of New York where a Red Bull fan might have originated, in the Brooklyn, Queens area, since they can get over to Jersey to see those games, right? Like, if New York City is moving from the Bronx to Queens and winning titles, what the heck do the Red Bulls have? So that's a really interesting side note, but it doesn't affect this game coming up. It's another road game for the Rapids. It's a tough road game. You'd be foolish if you predicted a win. If you put your money on a tie, though, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world.
All well said, Mark. All really well informed. You know, I guess the one thing that I may be hanging my hat on is that the New York Red Bulls have been road warriors, but they're statistically only slightly above average. You know, they've got 7 wins on the road this season. They're 3-4 at home this year, as I mentioned earlier. So, and then, you know, it being a Tuesday game, so it's kind of a weird situation. There's a...
Why, do you know why it's a Tuesday game? Like, that's... I don't quite understand where that came out of.
I think there's a concert that had to get rescheduled at RBA, and then it had to get moved to this weekend, and then so it got... So it ended up getting moved around last minute. That's why it's on a... that's why it's on a Tuesday as opposed to on the weekend. So, you know, it is a weird fixture date. Obviously, you know, the Rapids don't play many games on Tuesdays. They are playing a very good team, but they're also playing a team that the last time they played there, they beat them. They're also playing a team that is better on the road than they are at home this season. But, you know, Mark, I've been so underwhelmed with the road performances, and particularly the way they played in Seattle. I definitely don't see a win in this one for the Rapids. I'll bite your arm off right now for a 1-1 draw, but I gotta be honest, I see a loss in this one. I think the Red Bulls are too good. I think the Rapids don't have enough going on for them, and just given the way that they've struggled to play out of the press, particularly on the road, I think that Gerhard Struber is gonna look back at that film, both with how the Seattles jumped on the Rapids early on in the first half after they went down a goal, after the Sounders went down a goal, and then how they did that despite being down a man. And he's just going to be licking his chops and say, guys, let's just lean into that, and the Rapids will find a way to make a mistake that will ultimately have us take advantage of that. And I think Aaron Long's good enough defensively to marshal the forces against the Colorado Rapids on corners, even when they go Russia, 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 Mark, rather than going Loki's toboggan, which is a reference to the Jack Price interview that we'll be releasing later on in the coming days. So I've got a loss in this one. Rabbi, you want to do a score prediction?
Yeah, I just wanted to, it's not a fact check, but it's a Matt fact check. When Matt fact checks me, he usually says that I'm 80% right. You're 80% right on the preempting event that caused this game to get moved to Tuesday. The 20% is the word concert. Do you know what's happening on Saturday, July 30th, that bumped the Rapids out of that slot, as according to the tickets websites they were originally slotted to be in? On Saturday, 7 p.m., the New York Red Bulls take on FC Barcelona. Oh. So we have to kind of factor that in a little bit, in the sense of, like, are they going to trot out their first team and are they going to be exhausted on Tuesday? But another way of looking at that is like, oh my God, that's totally ridiculous. We got bumped to a Tuesday for a non-league complete cash grab FC match on prime time Saturday night. But of course, they're going to sell that game out completely and sell tickets to Barcelona at $1,000 a pop. So that's really frustrating. Craziness. Pure craziness.
Mark, shall we get out of here?
Let's go. Listeners, you can support us by supporting our sponsors. They are Roughneck Scarves and Icarus FC, makers of fine custom apparel for your shirt and for your neck, for a bachelor party, for a bachelorette party, for a Let's Watch the Bachelor season premiere party. You can go out and get any one of these items and have them custom made. They also have a great backlog of really cool stuff for the U.S. Women's National Team, for the U.S. Men's National Team. The Colorado Rapids 2010 MLS Cup is still on discount, so you can get that scarf if you want, along with a whole host of other fun things that you can do. Matt, tell them how to hit us up on the socials, how to read our written material, how to support us, or how to write to us with a question.
Listeners, follow us collectively on Twitter at soccer_rabbi, LWS Matt Pollard, and Rapids96 Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. We'll answer them on the pod, respond to you on Twitter. And if you've got something that takes a little bit longer than the character limit on Twitter, you can email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Support us by reading our work elsewhere at Pittsburgh Soccer Now and lastwordonsports.com/soccer. Read our Rapid-specific content at holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can become a paid Highliner for us, $5 a month or $42 for the year. And if you sign up now, you can still get in on that deal that we mentioned earlier about some of the exclusive and customizable content by request that we are now offering here at Holding the Highline. And then also, if you just want to give us a single cash drop and don't want to deal with the Substack stuff, we're on Patreon, patreon.com/Rapids96podcast. Listeners, we'll see you late next week, obviously, because normally we podcast on Tuesday, but Mark's going to have to go to bed after the Rapids game, so maybe Thursday or Friday of that week before we look ahead to the game against Minnesota United. Listeners, we'll see you then.
Peace!
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.